Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast. I am your host, Lataria Walker. The Army can be a tough profession. Mix in additional responsibilities like leading troops, attending college, maintaining a home, parenting, keeping up with finances, basically living life. How can we successfully manage everything? How can we not just cope, but learn, grow, and thrive? Resilience. That's it. Resilience is the ability to persevere, adapt, and grow in dynamic or stressful environments. Resilience encompasses internal motivation, persistence, and how soldiers revitalize, recover, and adapt in order to respond constructively to challenges in their daily lives. Training and education empowers leaders and soldiers to demonstrate resilience. When individuals gain experience in applying these skills, it enables cohesive team building and drives readiness. The Army Resilience Roundup podcast is a place where you can find resources that will help you maintain your resilience. You are resilient. Welcome to the Army Resilience Roundup podcast, episode 10. I am Lataria Walker, your podcast host. Today, our guest is Dr. Gabrielle Paoletti, a senior mental fitness scientist at the Uniformed Services University's Consortium for Health and Military Performance. This episode's topic is resilience and strategic habits. Dr. Paoletti will discuss strategic habits of mental resilience and how storytelling helps us examine those habits. We'll learn about the science of strategic habits and examine different tactics that can help us or others develop productive total force fitness habits. Dr. Paoletti, thank you for joining us today. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. As you said, I'm the senior mental fitness scientist at the Uniformed Services Consortium for Health and Military Performance. And basically, I serve as the subject matter expert in things like mental skills, positive and performance psychology, resilience, leadership. And I lead our mental and spiritual fitness content on hprc-online.org. Throughout my career over the past 15 years, I have basically applied like the latest research in this field to create all sorts of different, whether it's trainings, leadership development programs, or educational resources for audiences ranging from leaders at the Pentagon, Army, Marine, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, service members, also in the civilian world, Fortune 500 companies, professional athletes, CEOs, government leaders, that type of stuff.
Wow, what an impressive career. Thank you for your commitment to this line of work. I'm excited to talk to you today. This is a very, very interesting topic. Let's begin our discussion. How important are habits?
Habits are critical. Habits are critical to our performance, our well-being, our health, our ability to perform mission essential tasks. And the reason why habits are so important is that they increase our efficiency. So that we're able to perform actions using little mental energy, and it frees up our brain sources for more demanding tasks. So just for an example, if I were to throw a football at you and say catch, you would likely either catch it or at least be able to avoid it because you've been likely walking for a long time, and it no longer takes a lot of mental energy and focus for you to walk. You've done it a lot. But if I did that to my two-year-old nephew and said catch and threw a football at him as he's trying to walk, it likely wouldn't go so well, and I would have an angry sister-in-law on my hands because it's taking all of his mental energy to be able to start walking and be able to do that in a way that's eventually going to get ingrained so that he can go on autopilot. So the cool thing about habits are they're basically driving our actions on autopilot, that often we don't even know that we're doing them. And there's lots of different research in terms of how many of our daily actions are on autopilot, but approximately about half of your day-to-day actions can be contributed to your habits that you might even realize you have or might not even realize that you're doing.
Wow, who knew? How do we know if we have good or bad habits?
So that's a really good question, and it's basically relative. To the extent that a habit is good or bad, is it helping you live out your values? Is it helping you to live out your goals? Benjamin Franklin once said, your net worth to the world is usually determined by what remains after your bad habits or subtracted from your good ones. But really what's at the bottom of that is it helping you to be the person that you want to be, accomplish the things that you want to do? And if it's sabotaging that, if it's getting in the way, then it's a bad habit and it's something that you would want to change or try to transfer into a good habit.
So this next question is always, you know, a conversation piece for my friends and I. How long does it take to form a habit? Folks say 21 days, some folks say 90 days. Tell us the truth here.
The correct answer is there is no correct answer. So the truth is that it depends. 21 days is the common pop psychology where you'll see it all over social media in terms of what people sometimes think that it might take to form a habit. And I think that's okay in the sense that it helps people to get started and start forming the behavior. But the truth is, there's research that shows it can take anywhere from 18 to 254 days. And really what it depends on is the habit you're trying to form and the person. And the goal is to make whatever the habit is that we're trying to form something that becomes ingrained where it's our autopilot. And basically what we have developed is a strategic habit workbook that looks at and summarizes all of the research that's at least currently out there in terms of habits that helps us to get that number down as little as possible. So that whatever your habit is, based on your personality, your environment, your situation, how do we help you to get that ingrained so that that can become something that is ingrained in an autopilot? And the key thing with habit formation is repetition. So habits form as our brains learn that when we act in a certain way in response to some type of cue, you're going to get some type of benefit or reward. So your brain wants to keep repeating that behavior. And the more that we repeat this behavior, the more your strategic habit plan becomes automatic. So the more that we do it, the more that it's going to become automatic, so that it literally starts to get wired into your brain's neural pathways, where you might not even be consciously aware that you're doing the habit. It's just on autopilot. That's how you're acting in response to the cue. So that's really our goal is, how do we get that number down to the least amount of days as possible? How do we make that easy for you so that you will be able to develop that habit going forward?
Wow, this is so interesting. Dr. Paoletti, can you break down for us the strategic habit when, then, because framework? What's that?
Sure. So our strategic habit framework basically kind of breaks down the research in terms of what it is that enables a habit into a sentence that makes it easy for one to like put together and say, which then helps to make it automatic. And let's dive into it and then it'll become a little bit more clear. So the when is the cue. So the when is what's going to cause you to start taking action. And the cue is what triggers your strategic habit plan. Now, a cue can be all sorts of things. It could be the time of day. It could be a certain place that you walk into. It could be people that you interact with. It could be smells, feelings, thoughts, temptations, notifications, alarms, emails, text messages, just the feeling of your phone buzzing. Right now, twice today, I felt like my phone was buzzing and went to go check social media because I'm a big NBA fan and the draft today. So I'm, you know, all up on, is there a trade right now? And my phone wasn't even in my pocket. But all of these things, that the when is the cue that leads us to the then, which is the behavior. So the then is the action part of our habit plan. And usually, I mean, often when we think of habits, we think of a behavior, but it also could be a habit of thought, a habit of emotion, or a series of thoughts and actions that happen in response to the cue. So the purpose, the goal of strategic habits is for this action to help you to be living out your values and goals rather than getting in the way. So the next part is the because. And this is the immediate reward that you get from that action. And this reward can be intrinsic, something that you enjoy doing in itself. It can be internal, a feeling of pride or accomplishment, or it can be extrinsic, such as the taste of your favorite food or the excitement of reading an entertaining post. And the cool thing about this framework is that after the habit is fully formed, the reward can no longer be present, but you'll still continue the habit because it's now ingrained into your neural pathways where in response to that cue, you're doing that action. So the cool part and the benefit of this when, then, because statement is that it helps us to make our desired habits automatic because, again, it eliminates that mental energy of choosing whether or not we're going to do the desired habit when the cue occurs. So just to give you an example, like let's say we're trying to work out more. We want to go running every day when we get home from work. So by using this when, then, because framework, we could create a habit plan that is when I get home from work, that's the cue, the then I'll go for a run for 10 minutes. That's the action because I'll get to explore new parts of the neighborhood and feel great afterwards. So it then becomes automatic. I get home from work, going to go for a run because I'm going to get to explore new parts of the neighborhood and feel great afterwards. Versus person two, who doesn't have a strategic habit plan, so that I just got home from work. Should I go for a run now or should I watch a little TV and maybe go for a run later? Or maybe I need a snack first. I haven't really eaten today. And what's the weather like? I wonder what's going on social media, et cetera. So out of those two people, who's going to be more likely to consistently run so that they can make it a habit? Person one, because for them, the decision is automatic. It takes less mental energy to get moving, so they're more likely to repeat the action. And a lot of the research around developing habits is how do we limit the amount of energy, limit the amount of resistance that it takes for us to get started, and how do we optimize that to get us towards acting in the behaviors and developing the habits that will enable us to live out our values and goals.
Wow, my goal is to become person one.
Yes, mine too.
What is a common mistake people make when trying to form habits?
So the first one that people often make, and this is, we see this quite a bit within the military, is people often try to rely solely or at least too much on willpower, on motivation. And obviously motivation and willpower is important. It helps us to accomplish long-term goals. It's very important in a lot of ways. But when we're trying to form habits, the problem with willpower is that sometimes we're really motivated. And other days, you just want to sit on the couch. And our motivation might change based on our mood, the weather, how much sleep we got, and a whole bunch of other factors. So the key to forming a habit is repetition. But when we're solely focusing on willpower or motivation, and that fluctuates, then we're not going to get the repetition that we need to really craft a new habit. So the good news is that we can try to overcome this fluctuation of willpower by trying to make whatever the habit is that we want to form as easy as possible. So when we're crafting a new habit, one of the strategies that really helps is trying to think of future you. And future you on its worst day, when you didn't get any sleep, you're overwhelmed with all sorts of things going on at work or in life, what is it that you would still be able to do to get that habit started? And part of what we're trying to do is to start small enough so that you will still do it when the motivation is high and when your motivation is low. So let's just say your goal is to start reading each night before bed. And you want to read, you're thinking 30 minutes each night before bed. Rather than starting with that goal of 30 minutes, move it down to 5. Think of what's the amount of reading that on my best day I'll be able to do, and on my worst day, where I sort of have no excuses, all right, I can start doing this for 5 minutes. Because the good news of starting with 5 minutes is that just by doing that each night before bed, you're now forming the habit. And when your motivation's high, you did get, you know, like, you're at your best. Well, once you start reading, you'll likely read as long to that 30-minute mark. But when it's low, you're still making progress on forming the habit by just doing the 5 minutes. And one of the things that's tough is strategic habits starts with focusing on that value or goal that you're trying to live out. But then one of the tricky parts is trying to forget about that and making your goal just forming the behavior. Because once that behavior is formed, then you can always build upon it. After you get in that habit of reading 5 minutes every night before bed, then you can move to 10, then you can move to 15, 20, 30, until you're getting to that point that is going to enable that goal. But the first step is just getting it ingrained that you're doing this behavior consistently. And again, this can be difficult for the military, because in the military, like in that military culture, like we do hard things. So it can be difficult to like say, all right, let's just make it as easy as we can. But again, the goal is the repetition. So that's what we're doing over and over and over again. Another way that sometimes helps, particularly with members in the military of understanding this, is if we relate it to like doing workouts. So if you're doing a workout and the goal is to do lots of reps, it's not how much weight, powerlifting, it's getting lots of reps. Well, how would we help ourselves to do lots of reps? It would be by lowering the resistance. And this is what we like to refer to as optimizing your resistance in creating new habits. So by lowering the resistance, it makes it easier for the good habit you want for you to be able to create it. By making it 5 minutes rather than 30 minutes, it's like doing lots of reps, which forms the habit. So then you can slowly increase the weight as you're doing the things that you want to do. Sean Aker, he does a lot of research around habits. He has something called the 20-second rule. And really that's like looking at your environment. How can you set up your environment so that you're using your willpower to your advantage? I mean, your lack of willpower to your advantage. One of the things about human beings, and I'm not saying all of us, but most of us are lazy. Most of us are like water, where we're going to take the path to least resistance. So by setting up your environment so that the behaviors, the habits that you want to form, take 20 seconds or less, and making it as hard as possible to do the things you don't want to do, making that like 20 minutes or taking 5 minutes for you to do, we're more likely to then choose the 20-second option. So just for example, if you have healthy foods prepared and easily accessible, we're going to be a lot more likely to eat those healthy foods rather than if we have to get out of the house and drive to a fast food restaurant to go get that food. Whatever's around us, whatever's easy for us to do that we can do within 20 seconds can lead us in that direction. So whether it's by changing the action, then the behavior that we're doing to make it small and easy to do, or looking at our environment and trying to change our environment to make those things easier to do, we're really setting ourselves up for success and developing these habits.
Wow, this is such good information. How would someone go about changing a bad habit? And is it the same process as forming a good habit?
Sure. So there are a number of habit hacks that are important for both creating a good habit, but especially when we want to break or replace a bad habit. And the first set has to do with considering the when. So that's the cue. What are the things that are cueing our behavior? So when we're trying to build a new good habit, as we talked about, we want to set up our environment for success. So that's like thinking about what are the cues I'm going to interact with day to day in my environment that will trigger me to do my new habit. So like, for example, if you want to start running, put out your running sneakers the night before where you almost trip over them. So it's not like you're going to forget to run. Or if you're trying to eat healthier, having the fruit that you want to eat for breakfast, like out where, like right next to your keys, where you're going to see it each day and like you're easily going to notice it each morning. But also think through if you're trying to change a bad habit, what are the cues? What are the things in your environment that might be triggering that bad habit? And then what you want to do is to remove those from your environment. So for example, if you have cookies or desserts out on the counter, each time you're walking by that now, you're going to see the cookies and you're going to want to eat one. And it's going to take mental energy to each time you walk by to not grab those cookies. So rather than putting yourself through that, optimize the resistance by changing your environment and take the cookie jar off the counter. If you have a habit of like stopping for fast food on your way home from work, try taking a different route so you don't even go by it. You're not putting yourself in that situation, which is going to lead you there. Another big one, especially with digital or like technology and phones, all of the buzzes, notifications, things that we get in terms of that lead us to cues, which sometimes get you sucked into social media and you're just checking an email for a little bit and then you wind up taking off those notifications. That then changes the cues that can break us out of those bad habits. The tough thing is, though, we can't get rid of all the bad habit cues. There's some bad habit cues that are going to be harder to remove from your life than others. So there, what we can try to do is repurpose those things that are cueing bad habits into something that might cue a good habit. And that's sort of the trick that we're trying to do, is replace those bad habit cues. So especially things like boredom, frustration, stress, or just kind of general work-life situations, like it would be nice to remove the frustration, that bad habit cue of frustration that might lead you to checking your phone, but it's going to be really, really hard to do that. So trying to replace your behavior when you are frustrated to then something that's going to be helpful is the goal here. So for example, say you have the habit of going on social media after getting a frustrating work email. You get that frustrating work email, you just kind of want to clear your mind, you go on social media, and then you wind up getting angry at the world. Instead of going on that, try replacing that. You get the frustrating work email, have a mindfulness app, like front and center on your phone, so that you're almost tripping all over it, and then going to that first. And the thing is that this is going to be hard at first, and you likely will falter and slip onto that social media app after the frustrating work email, and that's okay. But this is the trick. Say you go on the social media app right after the frustrating work email, still do that mindfulness app immediately afterwards. Because slowly what you're trying to do, even if you keep doing the bad habit in response to that cue, by doing the good habit that you're trying to form right afterwards, you're slowly trying to connect them, where hopefully over time, you'll eventually remove the middleman, the bad habit in between, and just go directly from the cue to the good habit connection.
Wow, these are such good tips. Thank you. Next question. Is there a reward component to help with staying in a habit? For example, you know, I worked out 7 days this week. I ate healthy all week. I'll have a cookie on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. Like those types of rewards are nice, those longer term rewards, because it gives you something to look forward to. The thing though with forming a habit, and this is actually something that often gets overlooked, the reward must be immediate. So really when we're forming a habit, we're forming sort of that connection between the cue, the action, and the reward, like right there, like where it's happening quickly. So that's actually a common mistake that some make when trying to form a habit, is that they're focusing on long-term goals. Like I'm going to focus on losing 15 pounds for the summer. And while these can be good motivators, what we need is something that happens right away. Something that happens immediately after the action. Now, one of the cool things are like that cookie on Sunday, that can be an interesting trick to do, is the reward doesn't need to be consistent. This is another common thing that many people don't know when forming habit. So when it comes to forming a habit, you continue being motivated to do that reaction, even if that reward doesn't happen every time, or the type of reward is random. And it's kind of like how slot machines work. So we have that habit of pulling the slot machine, constantly going for it and getting the reward enough. The goal is to get that reward enough where we stay motivated to keep pulling the lever, but we don't win every time. And it really surprised me when looking at the research that we're more motivated to keep pulling the lever when we don't win every time versus when we do. One of the really interesting things was how social media is in a sense like that. Kind of just like the slot machine. I like right now, again, I'm really into NBA. I love trades. Any types of trades are get me really excited. Every time I go on social media, I'm looking for those trades. I'm going down. I don't get that trade every time, but enough I'm going to be able to get them. So tying that back into like having the cookie on Sunday, something that often parents will do this with kids is sort of having a, like an example that's often used is like having a jar with marbles in it. And let's say half of them are red, half of them are blue. And after you do the habit each time, you pull out a marble. If you get that red one, you get the cookie. If you get the blue one, you get nothing. But just having that action of being able to pull it, that excitement of might be getting the cookie, having that, you know, release of dopamine is enough to get you to stay motivated to keep doing the action. The other big trick with rewards is as much as you can, if the action itself can be the reward, like that's a great way to get a behavior going. So when you're trying to form a habit, again, we'll just use getting into better shape as an example. Well, what are the things that you already love to do that can help you to achieve that target goal? So for example, if your goal is to exercise, what do you love doing? Do you love playing, I love playing basketball. So rather than, you know, trying to go on a treadmill for 30 minutes a day, I'm going to play basketball for 30 minutes a day. So now doing that task is actually the reward in itself. It's intrinsic. I don't need anyone to force me to do something that I don't want to do to accomplish it or some external reward. I'm able to get it in the task itself. Now, obviously, this isn't for all tasks. There's going to be some tasks or habits that we want to form where there might not be, like it's not intrinsically rewarding. For myself, reading research, I need to do reading research. I like the outcome of reading research, but it's not something that's intrinsically rewarding for it to doing. So Katie Milkman has a technique which is called temptation bundling. And basically what it is that if you're having a tough time finding a reward for your desired habit, try connecting it to something that you enjoy that might be unrelated. So for example, if your guilty pleasure is like murder podcast or listening to some audiobook, commit to listening to it only when you're running. So if you like listening to that, then you only get to do it when you're on the treadmill. And this then merges that desired behavior with something that might be, you know, a guilty pleasure that you would be doing otherwise, but by combining them, it helps to connect it. The final thing, just in terms of reward, that I think is really important, especially for the ARD audience to consider, is your signature strengths. Signature strengths, which are taught in the MRT program, they're a great way to build in a reward to your habit by using them in whatever it is that you're doing. So just for those who aren't familiar, signature strengths are the character strengths that you're naturally motivated to use. They're the parts of you that you just feel energized and true to yourself when you're applying them. So like, for example, if you have a signature strength of curiosity and you like exploring, you like learning about new things and you want to get in the habit of running, well, try taking different paths each time that you run, so that you're exploring new things or exploring your neighborhood in a different way. That's then going to help you to use that best part of yourself, use that thing that you're already motivated to use. You feel energized when you're doing it. You feel true to yourself in the action that's going to help you to build that new habit.
Dr. Paoletti, does peer pressure play a role in the habits we form, good or bad habits?
Yes. Yeah, this is a really great question, because we are social beings, and that pressure that we feel towards our communities, towards others, can really be valuable in optimizing that resistance in terms of helping us to do the things that we want to do and trying to avoid the things that we don't want to do. So other people can be a great resource to help you to stay committed to your new habit. For instance, if you make a plan to go to the gym with someone who is a gym regular, this shifts the resistance to encourage you to go. Because otherwise, if you're not going and they're waiting for you, well, now you need to awkwardly back out. You need to come up with an excuse. Like, it's just easier to go rather than having to deal with someone who's waiting for you that you're letting down. So that's something that can really be helpful when creating your when, then, because habit plan, is considering, who are the people that can be on my team that can help me to stay committed to building this desired habit? But also, we need to think about that the other way. So we want to avoid or remove the bad peer pressure in our life, because other people in our environments can get in our way of creating the good habits. So if you're trying to avoid, if a bad habit that you have is drinking alcohol after work, well, going to the bar or spending time with heavy drinkers can push your resistance into the wrong direction. That's the peer pressure that, you know, our parents warned us about. So it makes it really hard to stick with our habit plan. So that's something that is really important to like think about in terms of when you're forming your habit. The other thing that often also gets overlooked is your group identity or even your personal identity. And these are the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are, who our tribe is, what are the groups that we belong to. But the cool thing is that when we connect our habits to our personal identity or our group identity, it again makes that decision automatic. So a silly example is, say you're trying to drink water instead of drinking soda, by identifying yourself as, I'm a water drinker. That then, when you're trying to decide, I'm thirsty, what should I drink? Well, I'm a water drinker, so I'm going to be drinking water. And I'm sure all of us know people who either do CrossFit or yoga, who are wearing the eat, CrossFit, sleep, repeat shirts. It's a part of who they are. But the benefit of that is that if you go to a CrossFit gym where there's that community of people that are doing it, all of you eat CrossFit, sleep, repeat, where it's a part of that group identity that this is who we are, this is what we do. And again, that helps to eliminate that mental resistance, that mental energy that it takes for you to choose the habits that you want to do.
Wow, this has been such an amazing discussion. Thank you so much. Gosh, this has just been amazing. In closing, are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I just want to thank ARD for this opportunity, particularly the webinars that we did yesterday in terms of getting to talk about storytelling, habits, how do we create behavior change, and how do we set up our military service members as well as their families for success to optimize their performance and optimize their total force fitness. And I just want to plug, if you're interested in more research in terms of habits or anything that can help you to optimize your performance, go to hbrc-online.org. And there you're going to be getting military-focused research sources. I mean, one of the tough things today is you just go to Google, you can find anything and you don't know where it's coming from. Or the other thing I recommend is when you're searching something, just add HBRC to your search. And then you can see if there's any physical fitness, nutrition, mental fitness, social fitness, spiritual fitness resources that are out there that you know are going to be military focused and researched.
Thank you. Dr. Paoletti, thank you again for joining us today. Thank you for sharing this very helpful information with our listeners. This has been an amazing discussion. Thank you, listeners, for listening in today, and have an amazing rest of your day. Thank you for joining this month's Army Resilience Roundup podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to follow the Army Resilience Directorate on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, stay resilient.